I'm just getting us in the mood.
Doing the intro.
Can I have a glass of wine?
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language. You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
Oh yeah, I'm back.
Episode 4, God Hates with Ben and Morgan. So how are you doing, Ben?
I'm good this week. I've still got a cough.
Welcome back to another episode.
Another fantastic
of the Discourse Weekly Show.
And we've been out working this week.
We've been working our asses off, by which I mean you had a couple of drinks.
Outside broadcast van.
And I didn't sleep for 30 hours. And then we somehow managed to find our way to the interest.co.nz world headquarters in sunny Auckland. And we spoke to Bernard Hickey.
Yeah, because he posted last month.
What did he call it? The death of the free market god?
Yeah, basically posted, said the way he felt about free markets being the be-all and end-all was no longer true, that we needed to be a little bit more protectionist and nationalistic. So we had a really good chat to him. I had a long chat to him.
We had a very long chat.
The guy is incredibly generous with his time.
Now, this presents something of a problem for us, because even though our show tends to run quite long, we actually had an hour and 45 minutes recorded. Now, what we've done was we cut it down to 20 minutes where he speaks specifically about
the issues,
about his move away from believing in this unfettered free market.
We've got a guest on Discourse.
Your quote from that article says, "The economic god of completely free markets and capital flows is not worth believing in anymore, and we must look for other things to believe in and do."
Yeah. So why did my views change?
Yeah. Well, did you wake up one morning and did you have a brain fart, or was it just sort of a slow realization?
No, it's actually been building for about 18 months.
Okay.
Because up until mid-2008, early 2008, I, like everyone else, thought we'd seem to have hit some magic formula. You know, we were growing, the whole world was growing, trade was growing, poor people were being dragged out of poverty by trade. You know, it was safe. We hadn't had a shockingly horrible war for 50 years. Unemployment was falling, inflation was low.
Yep.
You know, we've hit the magic formula. But of course, what we now understand is that was paid for with debt, and particularly in the developed world.
Yeah.
And essentially, some huge imbalances were built up. So the Chinese were creating trade surpluses and capital surpluses by exporting to the Americans. And the Germans were doing a similar thing. And the Americans were running trade deficits and current account deficits by borrowing from the Chinese.
Right.
So what you had was...
Both state and private. So, so everyone was buying Chinese stuff, and also the Chinese were buying the bonds as well.
So it's vendor finance. Yeah. So essentially the Chinese had these factories...
Yeah.
Wanted to keep the factories running, made the stuff, exported it to America, lent the money to the Americans to buy the stuff so that they continue to grow these factories, to employ all these unemployed or vagrant people from the central part of China to work in the coasts, and to execute this social contract in China, which is that you can have communism, which means you can't talk to each other and you've got all sorts of restrictions, but we will give you prosperity through this form of capitalism.
The sort of trappings of capitalism. But
we'll keep you quiet by making sure you have enough money and you're not in poverty, not in grinding rural poverty anymore. You've got a chance to get a job and do all that stuff. And the Americans loved it because they love to consume. You know, it's in a society built on consumerism.
Yeah.
And so they thought, hey, we've got the magic formula, we've got this reserve currency, we can borrow from wherever we want at extremely low rent interest rates. And look, the US Federal Reserve is saying that we can do it because they keep pushing interest rates down.
Mm.
And there was this period after 9/11 where the Americans financed two really expensive wars, went on a spending boom, pushed property prices through the roof, bought SUVs, built houses with four garages and five toilets
and the desert.
Six romper rooms in the desert, and this all seemed like magic. Americans were earning a lot less than they were spending, building up these big debts. The Chinese were running export surpluses.
And we were too, weren't we?
We were one of those developed countries that were doing this, spending more than we earned, borrowing money from offshore to do it. And the trouble is, of course, when you have to repay the debt, when you I mean, it's like any problem with a debt spiral. And everyone who's had a credit card debt that's gotten out of control knows this, if you don't pay the interest back and you continue to spend more than you earn, eventually it will spiral upwards and you can't afford the interest on the loan.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what has happened.
Right.
The developed world, America, Australia, New Zealand, parts of Europe, have borrowed themselves up to the neck.
Yep.
And now can't service those debts.
So just simply don't have enough GDP to service it.
So, and the traditional approach back in 2008 was to say, oh, this is a liquidity crisis. You know, the banks just aren't working. We just need to fix one or two banks and it'll all come back to normal. You know, this is just a blip on the road and we'll be fine. But of course, what they don't understand, and many people still don't understand, is that American debt, America obviously being the world's biggest economy is what it's all about, and it's the, you know, it's the model for our capitalist system.
Right? Yeah.
That's where they do it best and biggest. It has so much debt now, we're talking 350% of GDP, 400% of GDP, that it literally cannot pay its debts.
Mm.
What does that mean? That means you need either some sort of major debt restructure and potentially, or some sort of default.
Yeah.
So whenever someone's basically got too much debt, they cease becoming a problem for themselves, they become a problem for the bank.
Mm.
You know, when you owe $10,000 to the bank, the debt problem is yours. When you owe $10 billion to the bank, the problem is the bank's.
So
what the Americans did, and I'm now very clear about this, and I struggled for a while to understand what really just happened, was that American large corporate interests, particularly the banks, managed to convince the American political elite to bail them out.
So this was around Lehman Brothers and everything else. So that sort of started at
when
that point.
Lehman Brothers collapsed, the government did the right thing. They let it collapse because they'd taken all sorts of crazy risks. The market froze. The Americans lost their nerve. All the banks came to the American government and said, please bail us out.
Right.
And so the American
too
government...
Too big to fail, that sort of stuff.
And I'm not the only one saying this. You know, you've got all sorts of people from former IMF chief economists to Nobel Prize winners to, you know, former regulators of the American banking system, all saying this. The two big to fail banks got a government guarantee and then proceeded to start the casino up again.
Right.
And to make not just little bonuses, we're talking millions and millions of dollars of bonuses. So part of my change in approach is a revulsion at the takeover of American, in particular, democracy by corporate interests.
Right.
Now, I'm sounding like a Marxist when I say this.
Well, I mean, because people have been saying that for a long time, haven't they? I mean, about the lobbyists in general and, you know, from things starting from pharmaceutical companies and this sort of stuff. So it's not new in the American environment.
It's extreme.
But it's wholesale now, right?
It's extreme and wholesale and... there's no hiding it.
Okay.
You know? And what's happened is that it's not just in the margins and it's not just affecting a few people.
Mm.
An entire, you know, we're talking 150 million people in the American middle class have just worked out that they weren't earning enough for 20 years and the only way it was disguised by was debt they took on from those too big to fail banks.
Right.
And now the controllers of those too big to fail banks have pushed the losses back onto them through the tax system.
Yeah.
And now they've worked out, oh my God, our entire economic and political system is not only corrupt, but it just failed.
Yeah.
And they don't know what to do about it. So
this is where you're going to say that both the kind of traditional left-wing type groups and the Tea Party, the crazy right-wing nut jobs, are almost both saying the same thing now about banks and economies.
Well, actually, the Tea Party has been subverted by...
Right.
Large amounts of big business money. So the Tea Parties have been channeled to say, cut taxes, cut government.
Right.
But don't challenge the huge amounts of pork and bailouts for big corporates. To the extent that, you know, some of Manhattan... And do you watch Sex and the City? Have you watched the Sex and the City movies?
Occasionally. I haven't watched the movies. I've only watched the programme.
Watch the second...
I think you've been subjected to that by your teenage daughter.
No, actually, my teenage daughter is a fan of action flicks and gaming. She's a real gamer, so okay. she's not into. It's my wife that's into the
right.
The
Carrie,
and the whole
yeah.
What do they call them? Chick flicks.
Yeah, Carrie and Samantha.
rom coms.
Right. Like, yeah.
But I quite liked Sex and the City because it showed me a window into New York, and I'm fascinated by New York. I went there a few times. It's the centre of the capitalist world. It's the centre of the markets are based. Yeah. And I had quite a bit to do with investment bankers and the investment banking scene when I was an investment bank reporter for Reuters.
Yep.
Investment bankers are like used car salesmen, just their suits are much, much richer and their brains are much bigger.
Right.
But they have the same
pushing stuff you kind of don't need or pushing you to buy the next thing that you don't really want.
They're like, I mean, if what was it, Willie Loman from that Arthur Miller play, which is about the salesman in America.
Right.
There's a deeply American thing about selling.
Yes.
About
always be closing, all that sort of stuff.
Striving to do the deal. And the next deal that's going to make you rich. And if only you could do the next deal. Yeah. And these guys are like that. And their whole aim, because I know, because I spoke to them, was to work like dogs for 10 or 12 years between the ages of 24, 25 when they graduated from Harvard or some MBA.
Ivy League,
And then work for 10, 12 years of their prime earning time. Then mid-30s would retire or retire to become a CEO of something.
Right, right.
They'd do it with, 10, 20, 30, 50, 100, $200 million. And I'm not kidding. This is what they expected.
Yeah.
So they expected to earn bonuses of 4, 5, 6, 10, $20 million.
Yeah.
And there was another super elite of these people who ran hedge funds and were expecting to earn $100 million a year.
Well, I mean, I worked in IT and finance in Auckland only, Spices, these sort of companies, with AXA. And it exists to a degree. There are the guys there going off to Bermuda to work in hedge funds to make their millions.
For a long time, although I had misgivings when I was in London just to see it up close and personal, you realise there is something deeply wrong about people who are extremely bright believing that they are worth more in terms of how much output they produce than not just 10 people or 20 people or 100 people, but 10,000 people.
Right.
How can one person be produce as much and be more useful than 10,000 people?
Yeah.
And believe it.
And it's very short termist as well, isn't it? Because the bonuses are quarterly or half yearly at the most, and so you're only really about what's happening in a year's time or 2 years' time.
So they structured these deals so that income earned in 20 years' time was booked this year.
Right.
And all that guy just sold $200 million worth of securities.
Yeah.
Heaven forbid saying that those securities might not be worth $200 million in 10 years' time.
Right.
Or even tomorrow. They're just worth $200 million now.
And they get the bonus on that $200 million.
Bonus now. And, then you go and spend, you're quite happy to spend $10,000 a night on a hotel or buy a corporate jet or do all that stuff. Or do all the stuff you see in Sex and the City 2 movie, which is, the reason I'm interested, it's a bad movie, don't go because you want to see the movie, but because it tells a story about how a hyper, hyper rich group of people act and believe they have a right to act. And spend, and it's obscene.
Mm.
It's wrong.
Yeah.
And these are the people running, particularly America.
Mm.
Now it's less obvious here because we don't have the what I call the Macquarie millionaires running around as they do in Sydney. Sydney's is a microcosm of New York to an extent. And we don't have the same investment bank scene, mainly because our capital markets are so crap. but we just don't. And so that's good. And we don't have the same level of, extremely venal, obscene lobbying that you have in the States. So there's $4.5 billion spent on lobbying in the States.
Yeah.
And this is why I'm, and have been, against a free trade deal with America for years. Yeah. Because it is simply...
Well, it'd be free for them, right? But not very free for us.
No, it's just an opportunity to get done over.
Yeah. And it filters down into all sorts of levels. Like, some are saying ACTA and the whole Copyright Act and this sort of stuff are related to the free trade deal because they just want to get everything. Everyone gets in there and gets their 2 cents worth.
So the pharmaceutical lobbyists will beat up on Pharmac.
Yep.
The movie studios and music studios will beat up on anything to do with the internet. And
we'll have to come back to the movie studios at the end.
That's right. The big lobbyists for the ag industry in America actually has stated publicly, they put out a press release saying, we don't want this free trade agreement because, actually, no, we do want the free trade agreement. We just want to use it to block Fonterra completely.
Mm-hmm.
It's a free trade agreement, but the deal, the reason we want the free trade agreement is to stop Fonterra from trading with America. So, I have no sympathy whatsoever with the American political corporate system, which is utterly corrupt. Yeah. And I'm not the only one who's saying this.
No.
I do a thing every day on a website called Top 10 at 10, where I look at what's happened in the States every day. And just yesterday, the former Labor Secretary in the Clinton cabinet, so this guy's, creme de la creme, in the inside the Beltway.
Yep.
Mr. I actually know what's happening shit in Washington says, this is a plutocracy. This is a government that has been captured by big business.
Yeah.
And the most egregious capture of government by big business was the too big to fail bailouts, and then the subsequent banking reforms that went through the Congress that were watered down to the point where these too big to fail banks were allowed to keep their government guarantees, keep paying the bonuses, continue to socialise the losses and privatise the profits. And we had our own little minor example of this a few weeks ago when a Sydney investment banker named Duncan Saville tried to buy the assets of South Canterbury Finance after it was put into receivership.
Right.
And the government, rightly, because I think he could see right through this, realised that this deal, and I've seen the details of the deal, the Treasury released the documents around it, this deal would have socialised the losses in any South Canterbury Finance deal and privatised the profits.
So he was trying to keep the investment guarantee part of it going while after he bought it?
Not directly. Yeah. What he wanted to do was get the government to agree to buy the dodgy assets off him if he couldn't sell them himself. And he wanted the government to lend him money to buy the assets.
Nice.
No wonder John Key said no. Good on him.
So you come to this conclusion that the way things are being done is not correct. What was the reaction like? I read a couple of the comments on your post, and some people were quite upset about.
No, I kind of betrayed them. Up until a few months ago, I'd been, your typical. What we need is more free markets. We need government getting out of this. We need government to spend less money. We need to we need to open up. We need to go harder. We need to do what ACT is proposing, that sort of stuff. Although I've never been a mad ACT fan, and there's been quite a few areas where I think and have been thinking for a long time that we need to do things differently. For example, I've been arguing strongly for 2.5 years that we needed a capital gains tax.
Right.
That we need some form of land tax.
Yep.
That we need to get rid of, for example, working for families, and I still believe that.
Okay.
That we need to, and there's a lot of things that ACT, on the far right propose that I still agree with. For example, I think it's
selling all the state-owned assets.
No, not that part.
Destroying Auckland so their cronies can take it over with private boards.
I don't know about. I haven't looked into Auckland. That may well be the case. I don't know. But there's certain areas where I agree that. For example, we need to run budget surpluses, and that means actually cutting government spending in some
on
areas.
What?
Right,
health, so education,
middle class, and
fire service
tax breaks. So
interest-free
student loans, working for families. There's a whole bunch of spending. We've added $20 billion of spending in the last 8 to 9 years, with no real improvement in services or outcomes. So we have more people in prison, we have more people who are sick, we have people who are less educated, less well off, more people wanting to leave the country. So whatever we did didn't work.
Right.
And actually we can't afford it. So for example, we have a whole class of people, group of people who are sick.
Mm.
They are sick because they're not eating the right stuff. They're not exercising enough. They're not earning an income. They're not happy in the world. Yeah. Ask them if they're happy in the world.
And of course, the previous government passed some laws that required certain types of food be the only types of food provided in schools.
Right.
And that's been reversed by the current government.
Oh yeah, yeah. I should emphasise.
They didn't want soft drinks in schools.
Yeah. Basically. Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of, for example, fat and sugar and bad taxes. So higher taxes on cigarettes, higher taxes.
How about a higher tax on marijuana?
At
the moment we're paying an awful lot to keep it down and not keeping it down.
So
if you look at what California's possibly about to do, depending on whether the polls are correct, mm-hmm. legalising and then taxing marijuana.
Yeah, that'd be fascinating. I'm actually in favour of legalisation of drugs. I think the war on drugs is a dumb idea.
Yeah.
But that's my libertarian side coming through. You'll find a lot of people in the ACT movement, for example, are in favour of getting rid of those laws too.
Mm.
But my views on politics and economics and policy and that sort of stuff are quite eclectic, and they always have been, so I've never been tribal about these things.
I think that's a sign of sanity.
Probably.
But some people would look at some of my views and go, well, he's in that tribe.
Yeah.
And when he says something different, he's just defected.
So apparently is that why do you think the reaction was maybe...
Yeah.
Assumed you were a free market policy person. Because it agreed with their views.
Yeah, yeah. I say things quite strongly.
Yeah.
So I'm quite opinionated.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty aggressive at using the media to get those opinions out there for my own reasons. Because I think it's fun.
Yep. You think you can probably genuinely make change?
I'm not here to make. You know, I don't see myself as some sort of pseudo politician or someone who's trying to, you know, actually on the quiet get stuff done.
Okay.
No, I'm never going to join a political party or believe that somehow I can, you know, make a difference. I'm not interested. I'm just interested in debating it and actually having a debate. I like walking into the pub where there's a good old rowdy racket going on and having a chat with people.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
as it turns out, it's also how I make money. So our business model at interest.co.nz is about hosting a debate.
Yeah. It helps with page views.
Getting
and you
people
can sell those page views.
So getting more people to come and have that debate and hopefully be useful.
You're listening to Discourse.
And I'd say that he was quite useful.
Yeah, and I love a good rowdy debate too.
It's a great site.
Yeah.
Interest.co.nz. And it was a really great interview, and it was really hard finding a place where we could cut it, which is why maybe that seemed a little bit abrupt.
If you're wanting more, then watch the feed. There'll be more. And there's more, some really interesting stuff that's in there.
It's really good.
The rest of the interview.
Yeah, so check it out. It'll be up in a couple of days.
You're listening to Discourse.
News this week. What happened this week was that Stephen Fry tweeted he was giving up on going away. What was his tweet, Morgan?
This is from the 1st of November. So, some fucking paper misquotes the humorous interview I gave, which itself misquoted me, and now I'm the Antichrist. I give up. And then the next tweet, bye-bye, and then no tweets following that.
No, and so one of the quotes, so the Guardian article, which we'll link to, says some stuff, and one of the quotes is in it, that says, if women liked sex as much as men, there would be straight cruising areas in the way there are gay cruising areas. Women would go and hang around in churchyards thinking, God, I've got to get my fucking rocks off. Or they'd go to Hampstead Heath and meet strangers to shake behind a bush. It doesn't happen. Why? Because the only woman you can have sex with like that would wish to be paid for it. So, yeah, that was pretty crazy. So either that was misquoted or, I don't know, was he trying to be funny?
Or he's a dickhead who maybe has just revealed, you know, part of he has a history of mental illness.
Right.
I didn't know that he had a history of misogynism.
No, neither did I.
It is a wonderful documentary about his bipolar disorder, mm-hmm. And we can link that in the show notes.
So maybe we should talk to an expert about.
We should talk to an expert misogynism. Because what do we know about women? We know a lot about how to be really talented misogynists, but do we know anything?
I thought you were going to say you knew a lot about being really talented. Pleasure as a woman.
That person you can hear there.
It's going to be inappropriate.
We've got a guest on Discourse.
That is Rachel Goodchild, author and relationship expert. She runs the sex, relationships and dating website, askrachel.co.nz. Rachel, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Sorry I interrupted, but, you know, I couldn't resist, really.
It's all right. So Stephen Fry apparently says that most straight men feel that they disgust women, as they find it difficult to believe that women are as interested in sex as they are.
Well, he is old now, isn't he, Stephen Fry?
He is old.
I mean, he is 53.
And he has a boyfriend who's 25.
So I think that in some ways he's still hooked on that whole idea of the Madonna whore complex, which men and women used to sort of suffer in that generation,
where,
you know, women had to either be the pure vessel, wife, pure mother, couldn't enjoy sex, or the whore who only is going to do it if they're going to get paid, or you couldn't have the same person in the same body. And that's changed. And also, I think he's plainly never been to the viaduct on a Friday night.
Oh, I know, meat markets.
Yeah. I mean,
you don't need to cruise in a park. You just need to go to a nightclub.
If there was no such thing as women who love sex as much as gay men, there'd be no such thing as a cougar.
Oh, well, that's absolutely right. And the thing about cruising in the park is that I mean, the history of that, I imagine, is to do with, you know, gay sex being illegal. Yeah, and so they needed to keep it under the radar. They needed to keep it kind of hidden.
I think, you know, like I've got a lot of friends who are in long-term gay relationships who are very monogamous and stay with the same person. And I think that probably with them, sex would probably drop off as regular as well. I think if you're in a casual sex cycle, you are going to have a lot more sex. That doesn't mean that you necessarily like sex more than someone who's in a longer-term relationship where it might drop off a bit.
You're listening to Discourse.
Do women ever think, God, I've got to get my fucking rocks off?
Yes.
Of course they do. And anyone who's been in a relationship with a woman knows that.
Yes.
They certainly do. And especially, I mean, it depends. You can either be single and you can be in a sort of a casual sex cycle where you are just basically wanting to go and get it all over and over again with different people. Or you can be with someone who, and that's what I guess he's talking about.
NZdating.co.nz.
NZ dating, yeah.
This has not been a paid announcement.
Yeah. But you can also have it in a regular relationship. You know, it's normal. I think the thing is that there is the truth that with women, brain chemistry actually changes. If you have sex with the same person sort of three or four times, your brain
changes to hate them.
Emotional chemical bonding with that person.
Oh, it changes to like them.
Oh, that's good.
That's the opposite of my experience.
maybe they don't want to get to number three with you, Morgan.
Number three would be the first night.
Keep it down. Down the numbers down low just to avoid the commitment is always a good idea.
Right.
I can't stand commitment.
So I wonder how
gives me hives.
How could he have been misquoted or how could you even say that ironically or amusingly?
You know, the thing is, he actually wrote it, I think, to a gay magazine. And so I think he's talking to a gay market and forgot that there's other people that are going to be reading it.
Yeah, it was in gay magazine Attitude.
Yeah, so I think he's mistaken frequency for interest or desire in something. So just because you're having sex three or four times a day in a gay cruising area doesn't necessarily mean that you really love sex. It might be that you're actually feeling wanting an emotional connection, not getting it, and still you're craving for that need to have sex. Or I think he's simplifying the matter a lot. I think that there are a lot of men out there. I get a lot of comments from men who email me and say, can you help me? My partner has got a higher sex drive than me, and I don't feel like I can keep up.
That's a bummer when you're not matched. It is a bummer.
It is a bummer, and it can happen either way. It doesn't happen to be, it isn't always the man not feeling matched with the woman, you know, feeling that they've got a higher sex drive than the woman. It can be the other way as well.
Mm. Yep, that's all true.
I also wonder if all gay men go to gay cruising areas, which I would highly doubt.
Oh, so, they don't. Absolutely not.
It's a fringe behaviour, so...
It's the same as any fringe behaviour. I mean, you could say viaduct, going to the viaduct on a regular basis to go and pick up a young 23-year-old when you're in your 40s would also be a fringe behaviour.
Well, I've had a relationship with the same woman since I was 15 years old, so
basically,
I'm probably a bit of an outlier as well.
Nice. Not really, probably not really qualified to comment.
No,
you know,
exactly.
So lesbian bed death has nothing to do with this, but I still find it funny.
What?
Lesbian bed death, have you heard of that?
No, I have
not.
Yeah, oh, it's very unfortunate.
I think it's pretty quite healthy that Ben hasn't heard of it. And I think it's probably a sign of my sexuality that I haven't heard of it.
This is something very sad that happens with some female gay couples where basically the sex just drops off, that they, you know, the drive gradually goes away.
But that happens in all couples.
Sure, but they're not called lesbian
not every
bed
single
death.
Couple,
lesbian like, bed death is an awesome name for a band or for a relationship problem.
I think it's a great name for a band, lesbian bed death.
Yes.
Let's see what it says on Urban Dictionary for lesbian bed death.
I doubt it even exists. You just make that up.
I absolutely did not make it up. Lesbian bed death is a term coined by University of Washington sociologist Pepper Schwartz in her 1983 book, American Couples. According to Schwartz, lesbians have less sex than any other type of couple, and they generally experience less sexual intimacy the longer the relationship lasts. The methodology of Schwarz's survey format has been criticised by several researchers who claim the question about how often during the last year have you and your partner had sexual relations is too ambiguous when applied to the sexual behaviour of lesbian couples. Well,
that's
I mean, let's be honest. What does sexual relations mean?
Yeah.
I think it means that there's been some genital contact. Oral genital or genital. Or maybe hand genital.
I just guess it depends on whether you're Bill Clinton or not.
Depends on what your meaning of the word is.
And it also depends on whether you're married and trying to explain what you've been doing with your secretary.
Everything I can get away with.
Not sexual relations.
Yeah. So potentially could a text be included in that, you know?
No.
So I think the line can just vary. You know, is sexting counted in that?
No.
Is Skype sex counted in that?
No.
I think you have to be present.
So does that make those other things not cheating then?
That's not what I said.
The question was about
lesbian having sex.
It's not about have you cheated in any way, shape, or form. It's how often have you?
No, I still think online sex is still sexual relations.
Yes, are you rubbing your hands on your table
right now?
You were, weren't you?
It's terrible. It comes through the headphones.
A German study has shown that the female sex drive greatly diminishes once she is in a secure relationship. This is a useless BBC News article. I was hoping it would be a link to the actual research.
I agree with. Okay, so some of that research is true, but it's there's a whole range of reasons why that happens. So often it's also just this natural thing that happens when you have kids, and the female is often very busy and sort of turns to the children, and the husband will often pull back from that because they'll make an advance and it gets rebuffed, and they don't push through and just wait for that sort of the problems that happen when that happens to go through. And so you can get into these habits of just not actually connecting in a sexual way. So it's really about pushing through that situation and actually getting back into a sort of a regular routine. And I think, there's been a woman who've made the headlines. I can't remember the name of the woman, but she has this belief that it's, if one of you asks, you always say yes. And I kind of like that. I think that's kind of a good rule of thumb.
I think Dan Savage calls it GGG.
Really? What does that stand for?
It stands for good, giving, and game. And I'm
I like that.
And he's got a few, it's about kind of being down with reasonable requests, and he even defines what reasonable requests are. Here's the longer version of it. Good in bed, giving equal time and equal pleasure, and game for anything within reason. GGG.
I agree with that.
Good, giving, and game. Yeah, I agree with it as well. Now, of course, sometimes you're just not into it, and what can you do?
You're listening to Discourse.
Yeah. Guess who's back?
Sure. Hi,
back again.
Sorry, I had to take a phone call.
Rachel's back.
That's okay. We managed to do our intro, and so we did the intro to the show.
Good.
So
good.
Wow, you got him off really fast, Rachel.
I know. I'm very quick. You know, I know what buttons to push.
It's not you that's quick. It's him that's quick.
Adding that with a him.
I'm effective.
I don't know that it's a him, but I imagine that if it was a woman, it would take longer.
Oh, my God, that is so untrue.
It's so true.
It's not necessarily true.
It's not. Actually, that's true. That is correct. This is the wrong place to talk about hookups.
I get very bored the time it takes their partners.
Oh no, I'm not talking about the people who are like, yeah, I can fuck for 4 hours and then finally I come. And I'm thinking, oh, the poor woman, she must be so badly injured.
And saying, please, can we stop so I can just write the shopping list down instead of having to paper it in my head all the time?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I hooked up with a girl off Find Someone once, and she as soon as I touched her.
Wow.
Yeah, and she turned out to be a as well.
You know, Ben.
I didn't warn you about
vetoing the conversation.
I didn't warn you about Morgan.
She was incredibly good fun, but her two young children were in the next room, so we had to be quite quiet.
Right,
which was all right for me because I'm a sneaky sniper, but it was a bit of a problem for her.
Was it the first date, and she brought you home with her two young children?
First date, we didn't have a date. We just chatted. We chatted on Find Someone, and she was like, "Hey, so do you want to come over?" And I'm like, "Holy shit, you're right."
I actually don't know how people do that. It's not the one night thing or the thing. But I don't understand how you can be chatting to someone online, and from that work out that they're going to be someone you're going to have sex with.
I am incredibly charming.
But what if you don't smell right?
I smell good. No, that's true, actually. And smell really, really matters to me a great deal, and has been absolutely the death of, you know, possible relationships, you know, that I ended after one date because...
Well, this is fascinating to me. This is absolutely fascinating because we were just saying after you hung up that
after you rudely hung up.
That Morgan was about to berate me for my lack of, I don't know, experience. But no, this is fascinating to me.
All right, well, we'd better crack back into it. Now, we were just saying, GGG, good to go, good giving a game.
Yes.
So what else are we going to talk about?
Now, another thing, another one of Dan Savage's words is pegging. Have you heard of pegging?
No.
This is from 2001.
Sounds like it's potentially an inappropriate thing to talk about, but we can go for it.
Oh, this is when a woman uses a strap-on dildo to perform anal sex on her male partner?
You're listening to Discourse.
But GGG was good.
GGG is good.
GGG is very good.
And GGG is something to try to live by. And that means not taking, it's about being giving. Mm. And
it's 3G, so it's 3G. The 3G rule.
3G that actually works.
Yes, it's a 3G that actually works.
This is not 3G from Vodafone. This is 3G from...
It's global coverage, global coverage.
From someone who loves you.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming on the show, Rachel. You've been a really good sport.
Yeah, thank you. I've loved every minute of it. I'm sure it's going to get whittled down to about 30 seconds of actual clean material, but that's fine.
I hope that we can have you on again. Would you be willing?
I'm always really easy. I'm really eager to... Really easy and really eager.
That's the way I like my woman. How many complaints are we going to get for that one?
We did declare up front that we were misogynists. So
I like my women powerful, and I like them to know what they want.
Yes.
And to stamp me in the testicles with high heels.
Hey, thanks, Rachel, for being on the show. It's just been great to talk to you.
Okay, thank you. Right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
See ya.
You're listening to Discourse.
And thanks again to Rachel for coming on to the show. Check her site out, askrachel.co.nz.
You're listening to Discourse.
Stephen Fry,
I hope it's not true.
Yeah, I hope it isn't. But
I've watched some of his documentaries and I really enjoy them. And he's obviously smart, but I suppose it's possible to be smart about things and still hold really kind of crappy views about certain things.
Yeah, true. And I think maybe what Rachel said about him being being old. I mean, if any sort of 55, 60-year-old man does often have very, you know, old-style views. But Stephen Fry is a f***, right? We know this much to be true. God hates f***. As you'd know.
I'm pretty sure it says God hates f***s in the Bible.
Yeah.
Or is that exactly how it's written? God hates what? What does it say, Ben, in the Bible?
God hates f***s, apparently, according to the reverend, one of those crazy fucking reverends that holds the signs up. But, God also hates figs.
God hates figs?
God hates figs.
I'm not a fan of figs, but hate, that seems very strong. You'd have to have a very good reason to hate figs, wouldn't you?
You would. Maybe if one day you were hungry and went to a fig tree and there were no figs, you'd say, God, I fucking hate figs.
That is definitely not what I'd say. I would say, I wish there were some figs on this tree, unless I was some kind of petulant child.
Possibly. But in the Rally for Sanity, which was actually really interesting, it was Stephen Colbert and the other one. John Stewart having a rally.
The other one. A vastly more famous one.
Yeah, true. Rally in the Washington Mall. And there was a thing about the top signs from the rally. There were some brilliant signs about... there was guys carrying signs that were the broken image symbol.
Citation needed? I love citation needed signs.
There was a giant one that just said, fuck hate. And then there's a guy carrying one saying, God hates figs, with a Bible reference, Mark 2 verses 12 to 14. And if you read them, Mark 2 verses 12 to 14, the next day as they were leaving Bethany, Jesus was hungry. Seeing in the distance a fig tree in leaf, he went in to find out if it had any fruit. When he reached it, he found nothing but leaves, because it was not the season for figs. It wasn't even in season. And then verse 14 says, then he said to the tree, may no one ever eat fruit from you again. and his disciples heard it.
Isn't he supposed to be like a peaceful messenger of hope?
And he smote the tree.
That's really, I mean, it seems uncharacteristic, doesn't it?
And there's I read another site which had three different versions of it in slightly different language, so that's obviously well translated.
Well, golly.
God hates figs.
Well, I mean, it's figs. How could you hate figs?
Because there weren't any there.
When it comes to those sort of, let's call them Middle Eastern fruits. if dates, we can. I prefer dates. If we're going to talk about dates, I actually really like prunes.
Are dates the ones that have a hard stone?
Prunes are nothing like dates. Well, yes, unless they've been pipped.
Yeah, I quite like dates with stones because you know it's like apricots, dates, apricots, things where they have a stone that's not adhered.
Mm.
I find them quite fun.
Pops out.
Yeah, so you can kind of
The thing I like about dates is that the kind of the slightly the different textures from the outside where it's a little bit harder than the inside.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah. But I love the flavor of prunes, which are not, I think, Middle Eastern fruit, unless plums are from the Middle East, and I don't know if that's true or not. It doesn't seem likely.
Mm.
Not really related at all, but I like prunes. What are you going to do about it? Now, you know what else? On speaking of Colbert and John Stewart,
there was a.
Have you heard of the Proposition 19 vote that's currently happening in California? This is the marijuana law reform.
Yeah, when I hear Proposition 19, all I think is about is Proposition 18 and how much of a balls up that was. But
18 or 8? You talking about the gay one?
Yeah, the gay one. Proposition 8.
Yeah, I think that was 8. This is Proposition 19, and this is about legalization and taxation of marijuana.
So is it full legalization or is it just
full legalization
and decriminalization?
Well, I think that it's currently more or less decriminalized in California because, I mean, there's the medical marijuana and so on.
Yeah.
Now, of course, there's still the conflict between federal law, which is still, you know, prohibition, and state law, which is seems to be gradually relaxing.
Especially in California, yep.
Now, I read a figure somewhere. Now, this is going to have to be one of our corrections of the week next week probably. But I think California alone spends something like $1.5 billion a year on policing marijuana, you know, misuse.
And what do they get from it?
They fill their prisons from it, basically.
What's the cost benefit of $1.5 billion on locking up stoners?
I would say it was pretty hard to argue in favor of it.
I imagine there's some benefit in getting rid of the organized crime that you know, behind it, perhaps.
That's right, but that organized crime is only there because it's illegal.
Yes, exactly.
Anyway, so Proposition 19 is, and I think the vote is on the 2nd of November, so by the time you're listening to this, we might even know a result. I'm quietly hoping that they vote yes because, you know, there's a chance that that will, you know, be the first domino in a chain because I think that the current prohibition of, you know, various of the what I consider softer drugs is draconian, unnecessary, overly aggressive, overly authoritarian, and just, I mean, economically ridiculous. And coincidentally, I think we actually briefly spoke about this with Bernard Hickey, and he thought that probably many drugs needed to be decriminalized as well.
I'm interested. I come from a reasonably puritanical background on this for some reason. I don't know why, but then I just have to
remind. Have you ever smoked marijuana, Ben?
No. But then I have to remind myself.
Would you like to?
Actually, no, I wouldn't. But I just have to remind myself how much harm, you know, tobacco, alcohol, caffeine does to people. To realize that, you know, there's only sort of, you know, it's only the stigma of it being illegal that really puts me off. So yeah,
that's interesting because it doesn't put off most people. It's funny that you should mention caffeine because generally people would say that caffeine wasn't a particularly dangerous drug, Mormons. But actually, there's a story very recently about caffeine killing an English guy who bought a caffeine supplement on the internet, and where the directions recommended a dose of 1/16 of a teaspoon, he took what is described as substantially more.
So was it just pure caffeine powder?
Apparently
that's
so.
That's fucking dangerous.
Well, yes, it is dangerous. The coroner's inquest, which I don't know if they announced that for every death or only the really strange ones, found that he had consumed 70 times the amount found in an energy drink.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That is quite a lot of caffeine because some of those things are pretty chock full.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, he washed down the caffeine powder with an energy drink.
Energy drinks are, they should be made illegal.
The article says
marijuana is legalized and they should decriminalize energy drinks.
Do you think so?
Sugar and caffeine, I mean, what's the point?
Make sugar illegal? That's going to be difficult.
No, I'm just being reactionary, but energy drinks.
You are being reactionary. I would say, personally, I would say that, I mean, with some exceptions, there are certain drugs which are very quickly addictive or at least habit forming.
Yes.
And that I mean, I believe strongly in consent, right? It's with sexual stuff, with marriage stuff, I believe that, you know, two adults should be able to do more or less what they like as long as there is informed consent.
Yes.
This is why you can't have sex with children, because they can't actually give consent, because their brains really aren't there. This is why children can't sign contracts until they're 18. An animal can't give consent. You can't have sex with an animal. Adults can, you know, think about the potential pluses and minuses, and, you know, work out whether they want to do
that.
This thing.
So how does that fit with drugs, though?
If you want to do it, why is it any of my business whether you should do it or not? But the thing with heroin or something like so you might want to try it once, but then it is so addictive that it's not really you giving consent again, or pee, or, you know, various of the others,
and then
really
a burden on society.
It's not really about being a burden. It's about not really being able to make a choice anymore.
Right.
Yeah. There are some drugs which, after you try them socially, maybe once or twice, you're no longer really able to make a free choice.
Because it's been
with the drugs where you can continue to make a free choice. For most people, this includes alcohol. For almost everyone, this includes marijuana.
Right.
There is no strong addiction for most people with either of those drugs.
Yeah, okay.
So I think that you should be able to choose to consume them if you want to or not. And you should probably have the same rules around it. You know, you're not actually allowed to be at work while drunk. You shouldn't be allowed to be at work while stoned. You shouldn't be allowed to drive while stoned or drunk. You shouldn't be allowed to operate heavy machinery or, you know, any of those other things. Same rules apply to both.
So, but then what do you do? Do you have to have a scientific analysis on the drugs to work out if they are, you know, addictive?
Well, that's actually a tricky question, isn't it?
Yeah. Or do you just go based on history?
Because at the moment, well, maybe for some, maybe you go based on history. It'd be nice if we could have a science and harm based rules around this. I think generally, even with the really damaging drugs, it's probably a health problem rather than being a legal problem. So except for dealers.
Right.
I think for users, for punters, it should be a health problem. For dealers and producers.
I suppose you could treat it like driving. So if someone does use too much pee or too much heroin, you ban them from using it. You know?
Ban them, or offer them really decent help with getting off it. There are treatments for all of these things. So I understand that for those poor people who manage to get addicted to cocaine, which I understand is actually it's habit forming because it's quite fun, but it's actually difficult to get addicted.
Okay.
I understand that, believe it or not, salvia divinorum, which is a variant of sage. It's actually a legal hallucinogen in New Zealand, and I've tried it. I'll link up a video of my experience with that. The video is actually a complete lie. My experience was nothing like what you see in the video, and far too complicated to express in a video.
Right.
Apparently, it's actually really effective at breaking addictions with cocaine.
Interesting.
Yeah.
There's some really interesting stuff there. I mean, look at some of the LSD research that was done early on as well is really quite freaky.
And LSD, it's got to be said, hell of a drug. A lot of fun. And it would be really nice if... No, I mean, people have heard of bad trips.
Mm.
And now what was it that happened at Woodstock? Don't have the brown acid or something because it was bad. If it was from a controlled source, a known lab, you wouldn't really have the risk. Acid, though, is very powerful. Maybe that's in a middle ground. I think most people don't have a problem with it unless they use it to excess. Same as alcohol, but...
Yes. Yeah, all of these things.
Yeah. Now,
maybe
the thing
should talk to who's a drug expert sometime. I never talk to them.
Now, let me actually finish. That was all. That was like the worst segue ever. the thing, the reason that I even brought that up was that on the Colbert Show and the Daily Show, there was a really interesting ad for Proposition 19. Vote yes on Proposition 19. If we vote, we win. Now, this is about the difficulty of getting certain demographics out to vote.
Ah, right. Yep.
All the polling says that something over 55% of Californians are in favor of legalization and taxation of marijuana. But who votes more?
The conservatives.
The conservatives vote more.
Yep.
So, and it was a really interesting ad. And, I mean, it's a simple ad as well, but the idea behind it is interesting. So we'll link it up. It's just a YouTube thing. It's very plain. It's just text on black with a spoken word voiceover. But it's interesting. Is it as interesting as discovering a new primate species? I don't think so. But a new primate, believe it or not. Now, wouldn't it be exciting to see this in the zoo? You're not likely to see it in the zoo because apparently the people that discovered it, perhaps they'd been smoking marijuana and were suffering from mean munchies because... Yeah, but because now this is a kind of snub-nosed monkey.
Yeah.
Which apparently is so snub-nosed. There's a picture of it. We'll link up the article.
A bulldog.
Yeah, well, actually, it's a lot like a bulldog. We'll link up the article, which is on National Geographic.
Yeah.
It is so snub-nosed that when it rains, they sneeze uncontrollably because there's no protection for their nostrils.
What sort of bloody adaptation is that?
A delicious one, apparently, because these people shot it and killed it. The National Geographic.
Are they?
No, these were just just villagers in Myanmar. Now, this is called...
they're probably quite hungry.
R. Strikeri. Have we got... What's the first name? R. Well, they've nicknamed it Snubby. And this is found in the remote mountainous Kachin state in Myanmar. Bizarre. Found in early 2010, earlier this year. Has fleshy lips and an upturned nose. First discovered by hunters who killed it, the Nat Geo people got there in time to take photos of it, and they're actually not really very cute animals.
No, it's a very ugly-looking monkey. You'll have to have a look at the photo.
It is ugly. We'll link it up.
Do you think it's not just a deformed monkey?
They didn't just shoot it. They almost immediately ate it. So if we want to learn more about this monkey, I guess we need to get to the dinner quicker next time. Find out what those tasty brains taste like.
Yeah, must be hungry. Hungry people.
And it's already endangered. Surprise, surprise. When the locals shouldn't eat them, it's endangered. There we go. I mean, what would happen if the moa was discovered now? Yeah. Well, it would be very closely protected.
Oh, yeah, it'd be quite fun, wouldn't it, to have moas running around, I always think.
Mm. Oh, actually, and it's really interesting when you think about endangered species. When's the last time you had tohoroa soup?
Yes, a long time ago. We used to...
you could get tohoroa soup.
And tuatuas as well.
Tuatuas aren't tohoroa.
Yeah.
You can still harvest tuatuas. Yeah. Tohoroa, there hasn't been a season since about 1983.
Jeepers. From over-harvesting.
Massive over-harvesting. Uh-huh. Now, I mean, and my mother remembers having tohoroa soup. I saw a trade me auction for a can of tohoroa soup. Probably pretty far out its use by date now.
Yeah.
But... there are a lot of people who can't possibly taste what I think was considered quite a delicious species of shellfish. It's like a very large tuatua, I believe.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, because I remember we used to connect tuatuas off the beach at Pauanui, and all I know is now you go down there and dig around and you can't find any. So,
no.
Yeah.
No, it's terrible.
Hey, if you, speaking of monkey brains, if you were in...
tasty monkey brains.
If you were in church and you were praying and you saw a cross-section...
Oh, this is such a great story.
...what appeared to be a dinosaur skull on the wall. What would you think?
I would think that actually it wasn't a dinosaur skull as I was seeing. I would think it was the Holy Spirit appearing before me.
Yeah, like Jesus on a slice
and
of
probably
toast.
This would have to count as one of the miracles for... what was the Australian saint? What was her name? This is a miracle for... saint didn't abuse children.
I can't remember her name either. Terrible.
That's terrible of us.
Mary...
because it sounded like she was actually a pretty great person.
Yeah, MacKillop, Mary MacKillop.
Now, you're speaking of a post from Discovery News, but I saw it on Building Blog.
Yeah, Build Blog, yeah.
Build Blog?
Yeah.
And this is...
it's really cool. It's basically, you'd imagine a church wall with
it's marble?
With polished marble on the walls. Yep. Yeah, you say they'd be in slabs, probably about 2 or 3 foot square, and they've been taken from a big... you know, quarry somewhere.
Yep.
And you look at it and it, you know, marble is marbled. It's got all sorts of interesting facets across it and this sort of stuff. But this is like the cross section of a bloody raptor head or something like that.
It's incredible.
It's amazing. You can see the eye sockets and the skull. You have to see upload a photo.
It's like a slide from
a CT scan.
An MRI or something.
Yeah, it's great.
It's just a beautiful clean slice across the top of a skull. You can see the brain pan. You can see what looks like the nasal cavity, and then the lower jaw, upper jaw.
And they found another slice in a nearby slab on the wall. One thing I couldn't find in the article. Could you find that was when the church was built? I mean, I couldn't find it, but I imagine the church is quite old.
I don't think it matters. The fossil was there, you know, hundreds of thousands of years ago, millions of years ago, certainly millions of years ago.
I wonder if...
You believe that the world is 4,000 years old, Ben, do you believe that?
But yeah, that's what I wonder is whether the quarry guys said, hey, let's play a joke on this church. They found a slice with a dinosaur skull on it and said, this one's going to the church.
Yeah, that's actually a very interesting thing because, I mean, there was a long period in what we call the Dark Ages, which was actually a period of great scientific discovery, which is quite badly mislabeled, where people did believe in a magical world, but they also understood that there were certain things that they kind of believed in but that weren't real. And looking at this, well, listeners, look at it yourself.
That'd be pretty freaked out.
It doesn't look anything really like the patterns in the rest of the marble.
No.
And these people would be experienced, extremely highly experienced and skilled artisans, masons. You couldn't mistake that for...
No.
Now, of course, this was before fossils were recognized, though, of course.
Crystalline structure. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
I mean, would you recognize that? You wouldn't. You'd say it was a strange formation, but you wouldn't know what it was. Yeah. But people wouldn't have been playing any kind of jokes on a church because they would have believed very, very strongly that it was.
When you look at it now, it's very, very cool.
Extremely cool. I love it. It's glorious. Look at it in the show notes.
You're listening to Discourse.
Segway. Do you think there's no mobile data price war?
No, there isn't. It's still just too fucking expensive. The thing is, you know, that Vodafone came out and announced they were cutting international roaming rates to Australia to only $5,000 a gigabyte.
Well, that's very generous of them. $5,000 a gigabyte, no, crikey.
$5 a meg, that's all. It used to be $10 a meg.
That is movement in the right direction, but you'd have to say, not really sufficient movement.
I had a talk to a guy today, and he said, because I was saying, look, it's bizarre that, yes, you have to pay for your cell towers, but if people use more data on your cell towers, it doesn't cost you anything more, does it?
Unless you reach capacity and saturate the bandwidth.
True.
But they must be pretty far away from that on most cell sites.
But he made the analogy of electricity providers who have paid for their dam and the water just keeps flowing through it, but they raise the prices of their electricity.
Mm. They raise the prices to control usage so that they don't drain the lakes. But the thing is that the lakes, if they were full of bits, they actually would be effectively unlimited because there is no shortage of bits.
No, there's not.
I mean, I would accept throttled usage over unthrottled. Yeah, well, it's not nice to be throttled, but I'd rather have internet that was fast when it could be, throttled when it had to be, and never $5,000 a gigabyte.
No, you're right. Yeah.
But so to completely, now that was actually about a 2 degrees prepaid package. I think it was about $150 for 18
for gigs? 12 gigs. Over 180 days, over 6 months, which is, I mean, as far as a kind of randomly, I need to use some mobile data, it's probably a good price.
It's pretty good for the SIM card that you put into an iPad or into a laptop with 3G card in it.
So you've got 6 months, you never really have to think about it.
You don't have to think about it. It's a fair bit of data for mobile use.
It's a ton of data for mobile
use. How much data do you use?
I can get by on...
100 megs a month?
No, 300.
300 megs a month?
A little bit less than...
What kind of phone are you using at the moment, Ben? Windows Phone 7 developer?
I'm on the
casual... Because I see a phone sitting beside you. It looks very attractive. That's the most attractive Windows Phone 7 phones I've ever seen.
It's an iPhone 4.
Oh, is that running Windows Phone 7?
It's not. Now, I've never actually made a statement other than the fact that the iPhone 4 is the best iPhone on... The best... The best smartphone.
The best iPhone available on the market.
It's the best iPhone out there.
Yeah.
No, it's the best smartphone out there. Absolutely, hands down, best smartphone. Better than Windows Phone 7, better than Android, better than anything else.
Yeah.
But the thing that impresses me, the reason I'm backing Windows Phone 7 at the moment is because it's the first real competitor to the iPhone. The real possible competitor.
I would say the Android had proved itself to be quite a competitor.
That's bullshit. I'm sorry, but it's bullshit.
Do you think it's just a numbers game?
Listen, this is what happened today. Is I went to a Vodafone PR thing, talking about data and other boring stuff.
And that's where you got this iPhone.
And on the way out, they gave out goodie bags. And I took a friend down there who was incredibly lucky because he got a goodie bag as well. And his goodie bag was a Samsung Galaxy.
Dirty! What the?
Which I was incredibly surprised by. This is very, I have to say, listeners, this is very, very unusual for these little press releases.
Ben, simple request. Next time you go down on these things, can I come?
I'll have to ask you. But what will happen is you'll get nothing. We'll get a bag full of...
I'm sure that's right.
A4 printouts of what...
A Samsung Galaxy i9000, which is pretty widely considered the best Android phone
at
the moment.
This is what I said to him. I said, that's the best Android phone. You're lucky. But then, you know, the thing is that you pull it out of the box and you play with it and you put it beside an iPhone and a Windows phone and the thing just does not respond. Firstly, so I'm going to rant here for a second. I think I've ranted before, but you turn on their Samsung Galaxy, and the first thing you see on the home screen is a little bright indicator telling you how many apps you have running.
Right, so the first time you turn it on, it shows you the number of apps you're running.
Yeah,
and that would be zero.
But zero.
And that doesn't seem like it would be very sensible.
No, well, it's got a little widget on the home screen that warns, you know, it tells you how many apps you're running. When you click on it, it tells you how much RAM they're using and how much CPU they're using, which is just, to me, the epitome of what is wrong with Android. Yep. Absolute epitome.
Mm.
My mum doesn't give two shits about how many apps she's running, and all it's going to do is say, oh, geez, this number's getting high. Is there something wrong with my phone?
Is it going to get high, or is it always going to be zero?
Well, no, because it's Android multitasks.
Yeah.
So you need a utility to be able to shut down apps to stop your phone slowing down.
Right. Well, that sounds right.
And they know this, so they put it right up front and center on the home screen.
That's pretty wonderful.
But also, you know, you scroll around on it and this sort of stuff, and it doesn't respond to you and anything else. But
you know what? So they say that Android is free and open. Where can you get VLC? You can get it for iPhone. You can't get it for Android.
No.
VLC.
iPhone
only.
Wasn't it banned?
What it's going to be is pulled.
Yes. Why is it going to be pulled?
Some copyright complaint. One of the authors of some of the code, I don't know, made a complaint and said, you can't use my code for that purpose.
Oh, because it's GNU, GPL.
Right. Right, yeah. So it can't be put in a 4Pay package or anything like that.
Great.
Anyway, if you don't want to use your phone and you do want mobile data, what do? Well, you do nothing. But if you're in New York City, I think, yes, you can do, I guess we'd probably call this an art project.
Mm.
It's called a digital dead drop.
Right.
And this is basically it's USB thumb drives sneaked into cracks and holes in walls and mortared in place. So just the
USB port.
Just the USB port is visible.
Right.
And you can sneak up to these things and plug your laptop in and just see what's on there. And so the idea is that, it's like a have you ever heard of a geocache, Ben?
I have heard of a geocache.
Because I've seen you on TV doing geocaching.
I've heard of a geocache.
Tell me what a geocache is.
A geocache is a box of goodies put somewhere, and you're given a location near to the box, and then a clue as to where the box might be.
Right, and usually there's a GPS coordinate. Right?
Yes, a GPS coordinate to nearby.
Right. Well, this is much the same, but instead of a box of little trinkets. Cheap little plastic trinkets,
yeah,
this is a box of data. And so you can go on there. With a geocache, the idea is that if you take something, you should put something in.
Yes.
There'll be a log and you write your name in it and say when you found it.
Take something, leave something. Yep.
Take something, leave something.
Yep.
The idea here, I guess, is the same. So you take the GPL or Creative Commons licensed
photo
and you leave also something you definitely own and certainly not anything illegal that you don't own copyright for. Seems slightly dangerous to me
because
USB drives have been used as a vector for viruses yes, really successfully.
Yes.
I think that Iran nuclear...
the
what was that one called?
Yeah. I can't remember the name of it, but yeah, we talked about that.
Put it on the show notes. But so that one, I think, was used USB as a vector.
Yes,
I think. And so anyway, the idea is that these little USB thumb drives are secreted around the place.
So how do you find them through coordinates?
Well, there's a website which lists them at the moment.
Right.
I think the idea is wonderful.
That's peculiar. Yeah,
it is peculiar.
It's kind of peculiarly inviting. You'd want to protect yourself. Like
have you heard of a glory hole, Ben?
I have heard of a glory hole.
So you stick your fingers through and waggle them, and then you stick your through, and hopefully someone on the other side it. Now, in this case, I'm not sure what the worst case scenario is. Best case scenario is you come away with, a fun experience that you can tell your grandkids about.
Yeah, something valuable.
Something valuable, something fun. It seems like it's it's a gimmicky thing, but it's fun. I like it. I really like it. I hope someone does something similar in Auckland because it'd be fun to play with.
Yes, yeah.
Maybe I'll have to do it. USB drives are very cheap now. You can get little ones for no price.
Oh, they're incredibly cheap. Even 2 gigabyte ones cost nothing.
But yeah, that's right. They do cost just about nothing, and then pull off the case and stick it in a hole, and away you go. Nothing meant to be dirty about that.
No.
Now this is we haven't spoken about sports. Have we ever spoken about sports on the show before, Ben?
I don't think so.
So I went to the rugby. This is something that I do.
Yep. Auckland rugby.
I would say I did it infrequently. And it was really good fun because it was the Auckland versus Waikato game.
It was very
and
close.
The ending was just amazing. I mean, it was overtime when the last try was scored. And even that wasn't enough to equalise. They had to then convert it as well.
Whoa.
And so it was quite a fantastic game. Now, what another thing that is fantastic about the game, it was at Eden Park in Auckland.
Yes.
Which was actually disappointingly empty.
It always is for the NPC games.
Which is a shame. I mean, it was $15.
Yeah.
$15. That's less than a movie.
Less than a movie. No.
And it includes the train for free. There and back.
That's pretty good.
That is pretty bloody good. Now this is all apropos of really just getting to the story about the train. The train, which is an enjoyable experience.
Yeah.
But on the wall in the rail car I was in, there was the September 2010 rail performance metrics. This is a poster that they print out and put up for the public to see.
Now, how many trains were on time and this sort of thing?
Were they on time and how many trips were completed? Right. You would expect that the trains on time would be like 97%.
And trips completed would be 100%.
Would be 100% because, oh my God.
You get on a train, you go somewhere.
The total, now they call it service delivery.
Right.
As the trip's completed.
KPI.
Now, punctuality, this is the total Auckland network. Yep. Punctuality, 82%.
Oh my gosh.
Service delivery, 98.1%.
So what happened to the 1.9?
Nearly 2 out of every 100 trips don't make it to where they intended to go.
That's shocking.
And that's the total. That's the average.
Yeah.
That's not the worst. The worst line is the Western line. Punctuality actually is better than that. It's 85.5%. Service delivery, 97.1%.
Oh,
worst punctuality is on the Eastern line, 77.2%. And so this is
You wonder why they're in the news all the time. I played Train Simulator once, just out of interest, because I wanted to crash trains.
Yeah.
And one of the options in that was a Japanese commuter train.
Right.
And
you have to keep it within 99.99% punctuality.
It is on the control thing, it basically has need to be doing this speed at this point.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you won't hit the next station at the right time within 3 seconds, and you'll be penalised.
Yep.
You know, you'll be docked pay or whatever.
Yep. And they are known for having a really wonderful train system.
Yeah.
Now, it's often said that the fascists kept the trains running on time during World War II. They didn't.
No.
They absolutely didn't.
They were using them to move
tanks
around.
What they did do was control the media.
Right.
Right. So they could say that they kept the trains running on time.
Right.
But what the Japanese do is keep the trains running on time.
Yeah.
What Auckland doesn't do, keep the trains running on time.
Well, yeah, I mean, and this is why I don't hold a lot of hope for an inner city rail loop and rail to the North Shore. I mean, if we can't do it now, then...
And actually, let me say one thing. The duration of the rugby game was pretty well known, you'd say.
Yep.
Massive number of people go out to the rail station just across the road from Eden Park. No train.
Oh, great.
No train waiting. Finally, a train arrives. It's a normal commuter service.
Not big
enough. So there are ordinary people sitting on the train. It is completely swarmed, standing room only. Finally, it leaves, and then the train, which they should have had there waiting originally, arrives. Almost empty when it leaves. They managed to cock up something which was so predictable. It should have been so easy for them to get it right.
For the
a test run that they fucked up. Listen, to be perfectly straight about this, those people must be fucking idiots.
But trains must suck, though, to manage, because it's not like you can say, hey, just pull over and we'll move this bus out of the way and get another bus in. The train's on the
But it's double-tracked. It's double-tracked.
But there might be a train coming the other way. Trains are fucked. Trains are it's so hard to manage. Because if one breaks down, then you're screwed.
Well, I suppose that's true, but if one breaks down, you can just push it along, can't you?
Yeah,
if one derails, then that's another thing. But none of these trains derailed. These trains were just late, right? Late to an appointment which would have been known months in advance.
Yes.
Yeah. They needed to have a big train there on time, and they didn't.
I wonder how they got
And
that.
If they get it wrong in the World Cup, I mean, it's not a huge problem, but it's just so fucking stupid that they didn't get it right. This is the one time when they can really... And there were a whole bunch of staff there on the platform making sure people stayed away from the edge. They knew that they needed to have the train there. They had an announcement. We apologize for your train being late. Don't fucking apologize. You had enough forethought to have a message that apologizes for the train being late. Yeah. Didn't have enough forethought just to have the fucking train there on time. Just get it there. Get it there, you dicks. It's almost enough to make you want to drive, isn't it?
It is, actually. And you wonder why.
And why wouldn't you drive?
Because it's petrol.
Well, there is petrol.
There's a lot of petrol.
What's the alternative to petrol? There's no alternative.
Diesel.
Well, I suppose that's true. Diesel's pretty good stuff. It can be a bit stinky behind a clacky...
I need a good electric car, which I've been waiting for a long time.
There's no such thing. It'll never happen.
Really?
Yeah, it'll never
happen. What is this one that says 600-kilometre range at around 90 kilometres an hour?
Oh, no, that sounds impossible.
And it recharges in 6 minutes.
That couldn't possibly be true.
I didn't think it was possible.
Yeah, but it is true. And it's a German-based company, which this isn't even a purpose-built car. This is just some fucking Audi.
How does it recharge in 6 minutes? It's crap.
It's just chemistry, right? You just get the chemistry. It needs a certain kind of terminal. It needs to be a DC power source.
Right.
And I guess
massive
it just
amperage.
Dumps a whole lot of amps in. And away you go.
See, I have this problem with batteries, and you know, all they're contained energy, right?
Yeah.
And a hand grenade is contained energy as well.
Yeah.
So.
And a nuclear bomb and a pie.
Exactly. So because flying radio-controlled planes, and where you need to pull electricity out as fast as you can out of a battery, it's well known that you can cause problems, and people have set planes on fire by
they get hot.
Yeah, by decharging their batteries, their lithium batteries too fast. And also the other way around, charging them too fast, they can burn up as well. So how do they charge in the 6 minutes? It's crazy.
Well, this one, as you said, 600-kilometre range.
Yeah.
Often you'd say, and in previous technology demonstrations, vehicles have had a reasonable range, but they tended to go very slow. This one managed to do that 600-kilometre range at a speed of around 88 or 89 kilometres per hour.
That's okay for commuting, yeah.
Now, this is not unproven technology. This is a company that usually operates electric forklifts.
Okay.
And they run.
Run and recharge over and over again.
They run and they recharge over and over again. The company is called DBM, and their technology is called Colibri Alpha Polymer. I'm sure that means a lot. And they operate forklift trucks. This is what their business has previously been doing. And the forklifts operate continuously for 28 hours before recharging. This is not a new battery invented just for this purpose.
Very good.
This is something that has demonstrated history.
Well, those alpha polymers and the A123 batteries, they are interesting because they are just lithium polymer batteries, but they did something around the nano shape of the interface between the two chemicals to give them a higher surface area. It is really interesting stuff.
And this is interesting as well. It's just another iterative improvement on the battery chemistry, and this is going to continue happening. And hopefully, it's going to continue happening with chemistry which doesn't use chemicals that have to be mined environmentally, kind of unsustainably.
Like how do they mine lithium? I don't know.
I can't imagine that it's very nice. I mean, you must remember chemistry class demonstrations of lithium and sodium pulled out of the oil and dropped in water, and it combusts and starts. Skittering around on top of the water.
Nice.
I don't know if they're still allowed to do that, but once upon a time they were. But that's a glorious vehicle. If you crashed it, what would you say? Would you say, I was driving along and then the car had a crash?
No, I had an accident.
Right, so you would own your words. A lot of people don't own their words. A lot of people say, the car lost control. And that annoys me. That's people not owning themselves. They say, you feel terrible when something like this happens. And they mean, I feel terrible that this thing happened. Yeah. What's about the worst thing?
The brakes didn't work.
Yeah, the brakes failed. Or something jammed the brakes. You fucking jammed the brakes by being inept and getting a bunch of shit in your damn car there, you cockhead. Now, there's similar but even worse than just not taking ownership, not taking personal responsibility for the things that you did yourself. There's an American woman from Jacksonville. She's a Farmville addict, I guess.
Oh, I can't stand that. I mean, I haven't even played that game, to tell you the truth. I haven't either.
I hate Facebook apps. They just all annoy me.
Well, I have a hard time with bloody RPGs saying, kill 10 newts. So I just thought that something like Farmville would be the nth degree of that.
This woman who didn't have your smarts, Ben. Her name's Alexandra Tobias. She's 22. She had a three-month-old child who was rude enough to cry, which is unheard of for three-month-olds. As a father of two,
yes,
I'm sure you know that three-month-olds
cry.
Never cry. They would never cry, would they?
Oh,
that would be extremely rude of them.
Well-behaved. No, they cry. They cry for sure.
This woman playing Farmville, interrupted by her child.
Shook the baby.
Shakes the baby.
Shocking.
Absolutely shocking. And she says, the baby may have hit his head during the shaking. Not only is she a fucking murderer.
The baby didn't do anything of the sort.
The baby didn't do anything.
No.
The baby was the literal definition of an innocent. And she, this fucking cunt, says the baby may have hit his head during the shaking. Hit his head? She hit his head.
Yeah, it doesn't even...
It disgusts me.
I mean,
take responsibility, you horrible fucking demon. And I hope that your time in prison teaches you a lesson.
This is the weekly show on Discourse.
Have you seen this artificial gripper that uses coffee grounds in a balloon?
No, coffee grounds in a balloon.
It's basically a robotic hand, but right. Instead of digits, you know, discrete jointed controllable
yes.
digits,
yeah.
It just has basically a pad that right. looks like a soft squidgy balloon.
Right,
and that is water actually balloon. Filled with coffee. Yeah, like a water balloon.
Yeah.
But maybe a bit softer.
Yeah.
That is filled with coffee grounds.
Yes.
And it has an air pump, so it can pump air out of that, suck air out of that. And what happens when you do that is that the coffee grounds lock together in whatever shape they were in. So what you do is you make it soft by, you make it a big soft,
yeah.
By
and you
having air in it.
And you just splodge it over your
and
thing.
And you splodge it on whatever it is that you want to grab, and then you suck the air out and it locks in place. There are some things it's not very good at grabbing.
It's freaky.
It can't grab, apparently one of the examples was cotton wool.
Okay,
sorry, yeah, but there are videos of it grabbing a pen and then writing with it, picking up a glass of water and pouring it, and various other quite complicated shapes.
That's really
it
freaky.
Even
is it
picks
just...
up a raw egg
yeah.
and then they make it drop it so that it breaks just to demonstrate that it's a raw egg.
Yeah.
It kind of, by definition, because it deforms to the shape of whatever it's around and then locks in that shape,
it's
very gentle.
It doesn't actually grip it any harder, yeah.
It doesn't grip it harder. And it just kind of locks.
Is it because it's coffee grounds or could they have used anything? Is it dry?
There are other things they could have used. Apparently they could have used sand, but it's heavier.
Right.
And it's not quite as soft.
Yeah.
So, you know, coffee grounds apparently are just fairly light and reasonably soft, and it just, you know.
It's interesting, because when you suck the air out of the balloon, I suppose it just tightens around the whole thing.
Yep.
Yeah, really freaky.
It's a wonderful thing. Watch the video. We'll put it in the show notes.
Mm.
You're listening to Discourse.
And that's the news. We have one more thing that we want to speak about. Are you on the line, Robin?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Senior culture commentator and Wellington correspondent, Robin Gallagher.
How are you?
Hello, Robin. How are you?
I'm well.
The weather in sunny Auckland has been unbelievably beautiful all week. I hope
it
has been glorious in Wellington as well.
It has been. I was on the train on the way home today and I looked out at the harbour and the water was still and glistening and the sun was shining on it. And I just thought, wow, that's really beautiful.
Well, that's almost enough to make me want to visit Wellington.
Go on.
I enjoy visiting Wellington. I don't know that I'd enjoy living in Wellington, but you seem to have gotten on pretty well there, Robin.
Yeah, I like it. It's challenging. You know, the weather, when the weather's bad, it's not very nice, but I don't like things to be too easy. I like a bit of roughness.
It can't be that bad there when the weather's bad, because now, who was it that said...
Lonely Planet.
Lonely Planet's
top 10 stupidest cities in the world, was it?
Stupid
yeah,
city.
They,
sounds right. Now, what's the truth, Robin?
They have a new book. They do a book every year that sort of they look ahead to the next year and say, where will the good places to visit be?
Okay.
And so they've put out their 2011 guide, and that includes the top 10 cities of the world. New York's at number one, and they're saying, you know, obviously next year there'll be the 9/11 10-year anniversary, so that will be a really awesome tourist attraction.
Oh, my God.
Wailing Americans.
Not if you are anything other than white and Christian.
And Wellington is at number four.
Wow. That's a big call. I mean, what's it? So do you know what the two and three are at all or not?
Well, I do know that number nine is Newcastle in New South Wales. And
They better have good reasoning for that.
It's a lovely, lovely place.
Show your work in Lonely Planet.
But that's a huge call. So they're putting Wellington above, like, Los Angeles and
Auckland, Sydney.
Isn't Los Angeles widely considered quite horrible?
Vegas. But I'm just thinking of archetypal cities that are just...
Oh, you mean like London and Paris. Yeah, Let's use those as examples ahead of Los Angeles, shall we?
London, Paris, Prague.
Tokyo.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's looking at it in terms of where's a good place for someone to go on holiday. So, hey, Americans or Europeans who might be looking for something a bit different, why not go to Wellington?
When you're on holiday in Wellington, you go to Te Papa, you go to the gallery, you hang around on the waterfront, and then what?
You go...
Isn't that the whole place?
You get on the train.
What you do is you download an application to your iPhone called Welly Walks.
Welly Walks. That sounds fun. Do you put that on your Android?
iPhone or Windows Phone. Not available for Android yet.
So you're missing a large market.
We're working on it. But it's actually quite good because, I don't know much about Wellington, but it's got a food tour and a few other things.
You did just rudely derail Robin, so you'd better bring this train back on the tracks.
Sorry.
Bring it back.
Bring it back. Sing it back. Bring it back or bring it back to me.
It's just derailed it even further.
Well, that's what you're used to, isn't it? Derailments in Wellington.
Copyright complaint.
There was actually, wasn't there? There was one recently, but that was caused by a landslide. But then you get that too.
Okay, right.
There's nothing you can do about landslides.
No.
Land likes to go places. Just ask Canterbury.
Yeah.
What were we saying? Something about Lonely Planet. So is something in particular happening next year which has made them be excited about visiting Wellington?
I think maybe Rugby World Cup.
So why would they say Wellington?
Well,
isn't that more of a Christchurch Auckland thing?
It's a way of experiencing the Rugby World Cup without getting that full-on sort of Manta thing.
Party Central.
Yeah, because you never have Mantas in Wellington Rugby Sevens.
It's because there's no Party Central in Wellington. That's why.
Tell me about the Mantas from the Rugby Sevens, Robin.
All of Wellington's Party Central. You should see Courtney Place on a Saturday night. I tell you what, Friday morning.
Is it a meat market?
Saturday morning, Sunday morning, I'll get up and I walk down the street and there is spew all over the footpath. Oh, no. It's like being in Hamilton.
Glorious. Well, you've sold it to me. No wonder Lonely Planet loved the place so much.
Lonely Planet don't talk about that. Whereas Discourse tells it like it is.
We keep it real.
Yes.
Yep.
Now, do you know how else we keep it real? We keep it real with the Discourse Weekly Show Urban Dictionary Word of the Week.
Urban Dictionary Word of the Week.
Now, this week, we're doing things a little bit differently. Instead of one word, we've got a themed series of four words. Mm-hmm. We asked Bernard Hickey one. We asked Rachel Goodchild one. And now I'm going to ask you and Ben, well, actually, I'm probably going to ask you two.
Okay.
Now, the words that we've already had are lemon sniper. We asked Bernard Hickey, what is a lemon sniper?
Lemon sniper.
I've got no idea.
Fair enough.
Lemon sniper. So they all sound sexual to me now.
That's right.
Lemon sniper.
Lemon sniper. That is someone who shoots people from behind a lemon tree. So like there's a lemon tree on the grassy knoll, that's the lemon sniper.
That's pretty good.
I think it's a cocktail.
That's further away. The definition, according to Urban Dictionary, is someone who shoots another with a drop of lemon juice while squeezing a lemon.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that's I see. Right. Yeah. So when you're putting the lemon on your fish.
It's really good. Yes.
And exactly.
See, in New Zealand, the lemons often have these big seeds in them. Yeah. I don't know if you get these lemons. Yeah. They're like old lemons from suburban sections. And so
the giant seeds, yeah.
Yeah, and so they're unlike the ones in the supermarket, which have been
genetically engineered
to not have pips or to be perfect.
Yeah.
The ones in New Zealand, you slice them, they've got these big, thick rinds, and you squeeze them, and these huge pips dribble. And then it's not so much a lemon sniper, it's like a lemon mortar bomb. You get hit with a big pip.
We ask Rachel Goodchild, what is a lemon face?
Oh, is this that face you make when you've got the lemon and you do that little sort of pursy lip thing where it's like, ooh, like that?
No.
Now, it's traditional to consider that these words are dirty in some way.
Oh, actually, hang on. So we're talking about the face. Are we talking about an pucker there, Morgan?
No.
Lemon face. Is it? No, I really, I'm lost on that one. Oh, is it when you stick a slice of lemon in your face and smile and look
silly? No, neither of you is going to get it. Would you like to have one last whack at it, Rachel?
A whack?
Yep. A shot?
Last
a
go.
Shot. I was thinking it was a puckery thing, like it was like a pucker up thing.
Yeah.
Face.
Yeah, I've been intentionally misleading, basically.
Okay.
Yeah. This, according to Urban Dictionary, is a derogatory term used to describe a person that is unaware of their ignorance on a certain topic, despite insistence that they know what they're doing. The term came from a Cornell University paper called Unskilled and Unaware of It by Justin Kruger and David Dunning. In the paper, an example is given of a man who smears lemon juice on his face because he thinks that it will keep cameras from seeing his face. After he robs a bank, he is captured thanks to the bank camera footage. Even when shown the footage, he could not comprehend how it didn't work. Hence the term lemon face.
Can I get the number of that guy? I might be able to sell him a set of emperor's clothes.
You could sell him anything, but he's probably in jail. So he can only pay in cigarettes. Robin Gallagher,
mm-hmm.
Senior cultural commentator and Wellington correspondent.
Yes.
Your word is lemon crush.
Lemon crush. I see a citrus theme.
Lemon crush.
Lemon crush. When you have a crush on someone who feels really sour towards you.
That's good.
That's pretty good. What does Ben think?
I can only come up with some sort of cocktail involving ice and lemon juice.
Like a lemon drop.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm. Neither of you is correct. Lemon crush is what you have when you have a crush on a girl that's a lesbian.
Okay.
Mine was similar. Mine was close, I think.
Wow.
She might feel sour towards you because you have a penis and you're pressing her.
Well, no, except I think that lemon is a term that's used by certain segments of society just as a general word for lesbians. Not necessarily about sourness, but just about starting with an L and ending with an N, maybe. Now, would you like to stay and hear Ben's word? You can have a guess.
Okay, let's play along.
Ben.
Okay.
Your word for the week is lemon squeezer.
Lemon squeezer. I'm having a case of deja vu because I think I've heard it before, but I don't know what it would be.
What do you think, Robin?
I think it's Cockney rhyming slang for geezer.
Yeah.
That's awesome, but it's not correct. You need to try and have a whack though, Ben.
Have a whack.
That actually kind of is a clue.
A lemon squeezer.
Now, remember, this is according to Urban Dictionary. This is not according to sensible, normal people on the street.
So it's a double-handed wank then, is it?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, it's quite specific. This is about prison inmates who masturbate frequently, who perhaps you could say over-masturbate.
Right.
That has been your Discourse Weekly Show, Urban Dictionary, word, or in this case, words, of the week.
With a lemon theme.
The lemon theme. I thought it was a wonderful success.
It's really educational.
And that's why people listen to Discourse. Because we drop knowledge. Others drop science, but we drop English.
Exactly. So when someone asks you what a lemon squeezer is, can you get me the lemon squeezer out of the drawer, please?
Oh, Mum.
You're listening to Discourse.
Thank you for joining us again, Robin. It's always really great having you on. And having someone to stand up for Wellington.
Wellington women and witches.
Witches?
Hmm.
What is your witch?
I don't know. It just started with W, though.
Okay. A bit of alliteration.
That's how I roll. I drop the alliteration bomb.
You're going to turn into a poet. And no time bomb. So I think that's the end of everything we've got for the show.
And it was a lot of everything, too.
Oh, boy, was it ever.
Hopefully you're enjoying the things we're doing for you.
I hope so. And if you're not,
tell us.
Email comments at Discourse or go to the website discourse.co.nz and hit the talk back page. There's a little form there. It gives you everything that you need to tell us off or ask us questions or say, hey, thanks for the show. Yeah,
tell
really
us who
it.
You think we should talk to. Send us an MP3 file of your voice that we
if
can
you could do that,
mock.
We will make you into a star. Your life will never be the same again once your voice has been played on the broadly on the Discourse airwaves.
Never be seen the same way again.
The paparazzi will be all over you. You'll be that famous.
Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate you listening. Subscribe in iTunes. Rate the podcast on iTunes as well. You can do
rate it highly.
You can rate it and leave a review.
If you have to be dishonest, I want you to be dishonest.
But thanks for listening.
Thank you once again.
Have a good week.
You're listening to The Weekly Show on
With course.
Right, we're using that one.